Good morning. My name is Nan, and I will be your conference facilitator today. Welcome to First Choice Healthcare Solutions' first quarter 2016 conference call for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2016. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. A replay of today's call will be available on First Choice's website later today and will remain posted there for the next 90 days. I would like to remind everyone that any forward-looking statements made during the call are protected under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation and Reform Act. Such forward-looking statements are based upon current expectations, and there can be no assurance that the results contemplated in these statements will be realized. Actual results may differ materially from such statements due to a number of important factors and risks, which are identified in our press release and our annual and quarterly reports filed with the SEC. These forward-looking statements are based on information available to First Choice today, and the company assumes no obligation to update statements as circumstances change. Now, at this time, I'd like to introduce Chris Romandetti, Chairman, President, and CEO of First Choice. Mr. Romandetti, please go ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time. And let me first thank everybody for joining the call this morning. What I'd like to do is do this a little bit differently. I'll be taking you through a little bit more detail on the financials than usual and just doing the top highline parts because I think you all have that in front of you and it's available through our filings. So let me start off with first our revenues and how we reported and what we've completed for Q1. Our total revenues increased over 189% to $7.24 million compared to $2.51 million. Our Q1 increased over $850,000 over our Q4. First Choice Medical Group contributed $654,000 of that growth. TBC, one of our reported segments, at $45,000. And CCSC, Crane Creek Surgery Center, $146,000. Again, the approximate growth quarter over quarter was about $850,000. Each of our medical centers were profitable in Q1. Our adjusted EBITDA from operation on a non-GAAP measured was up 263% to $1,004,000 over the $285,000 from the previous period. With the building sale factored in, the adjusted EBITDA totaled $10,023,000. The net income was $9.57, or the equivalent of 36 cents per fully diluted share, compared to $31,000 last year. The building also transferred our balance sheet. The total shareholder equity at 3/31 is $12,075,000, up from $3,000,000. 04 at 12/31. Our total liabilities decreased $6.5 million at March 31 compared to $19.5 million at year-end. I'd like to expand a little bit more on that because as some of you and for the others, for the public to understand a little bit more about our open payables, even at the end of Q1 of $13.1 million, I'm going to do a breakdown of that now so that maybe you can all have a better understanding of it. Our accounts payables of $4.3 million are contributed from CCSC, Crane Creek Surgery Center, about $575,000, First Choice Healthcare Solutions of $1.8 million, and TBC of $2 million. We have GE equipment loans out for about $900,000 on leased equipment. Our lines of credit are approximately $3 million, $2.5 million at First Choice Medical Group, and approximately $500,000 at TBC. Notes payable of $1 million, stock shareholder base payables of about $1.3 million, and deferred rents of $2.2 million. Our estimated taxes, our ATM tax that the accountants have gotten us down to on the building sale of $181,000, and then miscellaneous small, although relative, we just bundled them up in a bucket of about $240,000 and other small obligations. But I want to take you up to today on an unaudited number that we've paid off since the sale of our building. Through today, we've paid off the balance of our settlement with Metrics of $450,000. We're totally paid on that debt, and that was the settlement of the Metrics slash litigation that was done back in Q4. Our Crane Creek Surgery Center note's been paid in full of $438,000, which was the $400,000 plus interest. Our other notes of $135,000 have been paid, short-term notes. Our miscellaneous, it's not just miscellaneous, but our payable liabilities that we were holding since Q4, and with we want to thank our creditors that extended us additional credit that I didn't have to borrow toxic money to pay. But we paid down our legal, quite a bit of our legal commitment to things and accounting bills and our accountant forecasts that we had to do in our acquisitions. And from the acquisitions, our bill, we paid $720,000 down on these bills. Through today, we've also completed $650,000 in stock compensation. So approximately what I'm saying is of the 13-1 outstanding, $2.4 million of that through today has also been additionally now paid down and turned into equity. Our unaudited estimate of total liabilities are roughly now $10.7 million. Approximately $2.2 of that is deferred rents. This is just how GAAP accounting is making us price out and put on our books as a liability the rents over the next year and time, the length of the leases. Approximately $1 million of these payables are also TBC's deferred physician compensation that was on the books prior to our taking over the back center of May 31st. This will not be and is not FCHS's responsibility or liabilities. Thus, my hard estimate of liabilities unaudited as of today are much closer to $7.5 million. Looking at our cash flow statements, our net generated from our operation activities totaled $317,000, up from a negative $174,000. Once again, Q1 has given us additional confidence that we're moving in the right direction as it relates to cash flow from operations. Our provisions for bad debt, our accountants are still requiring us to maintain increasing our provisions. Naturally, if this didn't have to be done, we would have had increase in revenues for Q1, but we've reserved an additional $293,000 in our bad debt revenues. We're thinking we're at our point. Remember, when your AR, accounts receivable, stable, you don't have to take a higher provision. We have to take a 30% provision to our AR, so our sales went up, so you had to take a provision for the increase in your AR. If we add more doctors or add more services, we got to take more provisions. If we go down, we can add them back. But once again, time will tell us, we think, towards the end of the year that if we've overtaken our provisions here, we will be allowed to add these back into revenues. So under new developments, that really concludes. I'm going to wait for question and answers on the finances. Financials. I know a lot of you all might have some specifics, and I feel well prepared to address those in the question and answer period of the call. What I'd like to move on to is some new developments, and some of you that are learning to know me is that I was very confident last year to tell you what I was aiming to do and how our team has successfully implemented and completed the growth factors of what we wanted to do. We are taking on two additional centers, growing the company from $8 million to $19.6 million, and putting guidance out to $30 million, and assembling the teams to complete these tasks. Again, can't go unrecognized from Chris Jones, who heads up our entire medical division as VP of Medical Operation, that oversees all the doctors, the 150-plus employees. And it's real easy to say just double your business, but when it really comes down to just making it happen, if you remember back in the 90s when people tried to buy practices, they couldn't get this portion of the deal done. They couldn't assemble them and then get them to cohesively work together in a timely manner. And so for that matter, I think she's done an excellent job. I know she's done an excellent job to get this done. And then also from Donald, our current CFO, that's doing a great job on our growth and getting us to where we've been. And Julie is our controller, assisting him on putting these financials out in a timely manner. There's when you still take over operations, it's a lot to consolidate. And we feel very confident now. We're the numbers are tightening up and nailing down and getting to a point where we can really get a handle closer and closer as these quarters now are producing to where we have other opportunities to maximize our efficiencies. So moving on to some new developments, and like I had mentioned before, in the past I always set up my goals, and I like to let you know what I still feel for 2016 we're striving towards. So I'd like to put them in no particular order to recap what we're trying to do. I've mentioned to you all in different conferences we've been at, but publicly, that we're aiming to add 4 to 6 doctors to the Melbourne Center of Excellence. This will help achieve us get to one day where I think the 95% performance profile of the Melbourne Centers of Excellence can get closer to a $50 million run rate. So as we're lucky to start adding these, we'll discuss that in a few minutes, what our progress is. We'll continue to grow and add ancillary services to support these additional doctors and to increase services that haven't currently been provided as they become available and get vetted properly to make sure that they are what our patients need. And again, remember, ancillary services are products that if our doctors were working elsewhere, they're writing scripts to have you go somewhere else to do it. And that's what we're constantly looking at capturing and bringing in-house so that we can be prepared to service our patients in a timely and an efficient manner and under one roof. Secure additional bank financing to run parallel with our growth strategy of adding additional centers. Now, we'll discuss that in a few minutes in further detail. And still looking now to round out and add the independent directors as I've been speaking with you. Again, these are my goals for this year to complete. And not only just for our growth and to bring in some independence to the board and the subcommittees, but definitely to complete the balance of the requirements for the uplisting capability we're still striving to get to. Be prepared to uplist to a national exchange. Some of you might have seen Andy last week at one of the conferences I was at NASDAQ. He gave me all his updated requirements, and naturally we're dealing with Paul at the New York Stock Exchange on making sure our picks and people are vetted properly to make sure they'll work and what the requirements are for this particular exchange uplisting requirements. And then complete our final steps in what we've always been discussing is the, you know, rounding out and adding additional management, and this would be for our CFO. And so we'll discuss that. So with no further delay now, those are my goals that I'm still aiming for, and now I'm going to go down with a little detail further on each one of those. So as we state today, as it relates to doctors, again, mentioning we were looking for 4 to 6 and bring them in and to successfully start bringing them on board today, we successfully want to let you know that we have signed and hired 2 additional orthopedics to the First Choice Medical Group, both in which will have started by June 1 here in less than 10 or 12 days. So we'd like to give special thanks again to Chris Jones on the details of getting these contracts in place, getting them credentialed, and bringing these folks in a timely manner. Now, some people would say, you know, let me tell you, that takes months. It takes months to get these doctors credentialed. And in doing that, I'd like to let you know that I would have and could have possibly had them on here in January 1. But the problem is it takes cash flow to bring a doctor in. So you have to go negative on paying them and ramping them up as your AR waits to come in. And until the building was 100% completed, I couldn't take the obligation on to bring in 2 of these great physicians that we'll be discussing in the future in their capability. But as I've said, they're both in the field of orthopedics, and they'll be hired and have been hired under the segment of First Choice Medical Group. That still leaves 2 more that I'm telling you that we're looking to round out at TBC for spine surgeons. We've identified 3 or 4. These take a little bit more time, but with success, we're hoping to have not less than 1, but possibly 2 of them on board by year end. But these are definitely a little bit longer lead time to accomplish. And then the other 2, in a timely manner, might be in the area of interventional pain and pain management at TBC. So that's our goal as it relates to doctors. So as it relates to the increase of ancillary services, just organically, you would know that if you had 2, 4, or 6 doctors, and we have 6 or 8 or 10 now, our ancillary should replicate those services needed by those providers by the same percentages. And if we're making some money now, it's pretty straightforward to look at that. If you start to do an MRI and all your bills are paid and you're making a little money, then the next MRI is going to be have a lot more profitability to go to the bottom line. So we really think it isn't a matter of a lineal bolt-on of services. It exponentially should start to affect our financials in a more positive manner. in discussion with several conventional banks regarding securing additional lines of credit and lease options. Again, the CFO that we have potentially lined up that we're in discussions with, this will help us because, you know, looking at whether we want to take over a facility or look at or when I say take over, and this is where I get, I don't want to mix up the thoughts here, trying not to do an acquisition or an acquisition or is organic. So if it is that we're trying to open another facility in another community that you have all heard of these other cities in Florida we're looking at, we have been approached that we could possibly go into these facilities and lease everything we want, from the build-out to the equipment to the computers to everything that's on there. There's an advantage to that in some degree because if you can do the right capital leases, you can take off 50% on major items in your first year in depreciation, which, again, will help offset gains that we hope to be achieving. So we're looking at that compared to just a straight line of credit. Now, both of these that we've been in talked are conventional loan rates that I get more accustomed to. I've always said you either borrow money at 3 or 4% or 30. There's not a lot in the middle you can get. But the ones that we're discussing here are in those ranges of 4 to 5%, and it's not a conventional convertible product, and it's not an equity product. These are straightforward loans and lines. In discussion with these banks, we've also looked at the timing of what this would do, but we really do feel that this will run parallel with the opportunities as it relates to our expansion plans. We're in talks with prospective new independent directors. This is something that we think is important that we have to vet them and make sure that as the company's evolving and we need to put these people these directors in, not only from a requirement from a national standpoint of an uplisting, but from the company and from the actual growth of what it is we're trying to achieve. So we're still looking at these potentials. We have six potential directors right now, and as I said, we're looking around the board out with three independent directors in the upcoming year that's coming up here, and that will be done as we see fit. So staying talking about the uplisting, I think I mentioned that earlier. We're in constant talks. There's different requirements. The NASDAQ has a $3 requirement unless we're over two for a certain amount of period, and the New York Exchange has a $2 requirement for 30 days. So clearly those are our last obstacles that are in our way there. And, again, we're not pushing every day to say we have to be there, but we think the company will grow into that. And if and when it does, we want to be prepared. I think I've mentioned I can expand further on the CFO, but we're very close with a particular candidate that we're talking with, and we hope to report shortly that this next step will be concluded. We'll currently be going to the LD Micro out in California. If anybody on the call has any specific meetings they'd like to line me up on, I believe that's June 7th through the 9th. Please don't hesitate to let me know if there's somebody on the West Coast you think we should meet with. So that currently wraps up our new business, and at this time, I think what I'd like to do is I had some prior questions that were emailed to me, and I'd like to go through those now, or at least a few of those, to discuss what was sent in to us. So with that, one of the questions were brought to my attention that somebody wanted to turn around and inquire about, you know, what are our plans to do with the capital that we currently have from the sale of the building? And naturally, it would be the reason we bought this capital from the fixed asset into cash is to run parallel with our strategic growth plan. So there's nothing more that we'd want to do than to deploy this into an acquisition or a ramping up of a second unit in line with bringing in working capital with a line of credit or a lease. Somebody else asked, will we be giving guidance for 2017? I'm going to reserve to say that we probably would, but that wouldn't be until possibly Q3 when I start to see how our other doctors perform and some of our other potential reviewing of opportunities mature. When does the company plan on opening the next center? Well, that's a pretty wide open question. I think I've mentioned on the first last call last quarter, and again on this call, I'll repeat again that we are reviewing opportunities as we speak. I've told you that I think there's 260 some on opportunities in the country, so we put the filter on that. We've brought it all the way down, and we've decided our next opportunity should be in our same billing zone of our Medicare number, which is Central Florida, and within 2 hours of corporate headquarters, which opens us up from Sarasota, Tampa, Clearwater, Jacksonville, Orlando, and then we're just adding doctors to our payer, so the timeline is 3 months shorter, and so we put the filter on these opportunities and then looked at who's on Athena, and that took it down to we have still 8 great prospects within, we think, that area that are candidates for us to be working as we are working hard right now. So another question was, does the company plan to enter into any other vertical markets? Now, from a management standpoint in the back of the house, clearly I think this would work well with cardiologists and could work with other subspecialties, but the answer today is no, not today. The answer is to stay laser focused on what I've been talking at every meeting and you've been hearing from me is to do orthopedics. To us, it's the highest reimbursement dollars. It's a centric of care that we are really getting our hands on, and we feel very confident in the space that we're in. So yes, we're going to stay in this space as for now. One of the other questions was, you know, could we explain a little bit more from our product mix? Well, I've explained to everybody that, you know, our goal in the community is to do 4,000 surgeries. I know that sounds just like a number is a number, but if we can get to our 4,000 surgeries and our average capture rate is 12,500, this then would be the lines to be a $50 million unit. So there are some surgeries that sometimes you'll bring a doctor in that don't bring in as much as a different type case, which could be, say, a complex spine surgery to maybe a carpal tunnel on a hand. But at the end of the day is when you want to be a true community leader in your space, the person that comes in for a complex spine surgery might need their carpal tunnel worked on. So you have to do both. So, again, what I've always put out as my projected averages are averages, and that's exactly what they are. It's a product mix. You just don't take and do the complex spine and disregard the patient for their other services. You take care of the patient from when their kid does damage to their ankle on the soccer field, and when they come in for service, their mom and dad come, grandma and grandpa come, and you own that family and have the right to own that family for the rest of your life. So we try to really take care of all the way down to peds, all the way through elderly folks that need hips done on a rate of a tremendous amount in our particular community. Somebody asked this question, well, the political landscape, how will it affect the plan on maintaining the growth in your business? Again, from our, you know, this is why we're having this call, so that it's a public record. The landscape today has afforded us to have the ability to keep up, whether it be the Affordable Care Act that's in place today, which is allowing us to do surgeries on as many patients that have that product, to people that have third-party payer insurance, to people that have self-pay. I can't forecast who or where the political environment's going to go, but what I've always told you is that we are prepared under either circumstance, whether it gets repealed, whether it stays in place. 2 years from now, this will not be the product. This will be going to bundled payments and bundled services for the service lines we think we're in. And to do that, you have to be prepared to own the patient through the entire event. So you do your appointments, you do your physical therapy, you do your conservative care, you do your MRIs, X-rays, you give them a brace, and if none of that worked and they don't rebound, you do your surgery, you do your physical care, and you take care of them with PT and occupational therapy, and you get them back to work. And one day that'll be a flat rate. This is happening around the country. And when you own everything I just described, you can bid that work, and that's where I still say we're going, and most of you on the call know that as you're reading the journals and figuring out that it's going to finally happen. And you can't do that. 70% of the independent practices out there won't be on that list to bid that work because they are just great doctors in the community that cannot reactively meet that demand of saying we can do it all. Those will be our opportunities that are coming. On my last conference or my last presentation, I think I should bring into this was another part to demonstrate that of the estimated 28,000 orthopedics that are in the country, we're estimating 7,500 of them are in hospitals. The other 14,000 are in private practice. It's still out there estimated over the next 3 years that 6,500 of these will be leaving private practice and moving into a hospital environment. And I'm telling you, after 4 years in a hospital, there's a percentage of those that are leaving hospitals and coming back into the private sector. So we have had the opportunity now to bring on doctors from both sides, ones that have joined hospitals. The grass wasn't as greener, and now they've joined back into us because they know that we don't cap them at what they do, and they can run. They have their autonomy to run their own practice within ours. So we think that's where we have an opportunity to go out and try to capture these. So with that, that concludes my pre-answer questions that were asked. And what I'd like to do is turn it back over to the operator so that we can open this up for questions and answers at this time.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Again, to ask a question, it is star, then one. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Gilbert Goldstein, who is self-employed. Please go ahead.
Very nice report, very well presented. What is the market for the interest that we all own?
What is the market? By the way, hello, Gil. So maybe rephrase that so I can answer that correctly, Gil. The size of the market or rephrase your question?
The value, if somebody wanted to sell or buy an interest in the company.
Well, that would be the current. I don't have the current trading price or what it's trading at, but the market is publicly traded, and without a doubt, if you knowing you're an investor, you can call your broker, and that's just what it's trading for. But I haven't looked up today's trading price or
what it's trading last week's.
What's that?
You have anything within the last week or two?
Well, I can tell you, I just did log on while I'm sitting here, and today there's been some trading at $1.07 per share, it looks like. It was the last trade.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Our next question comes from Dennis. Please go ahead.
Chris, nice job on the numbers and good forecasting. Something that's a heck of a lot harder for a lot of us is how are you doing on that, weight loss subject?
Well, Dennis, it's always a pleasure out of Minneapolis to hear your voice. But on a personal note, on my last call, in case some of you aren't on it, I took a personal goal to let you know that I'm not in charge or control of a stock price, but what I did say is that I was in control of something I wanted to do, and I made a goal to lose 50 pounds in 6 months, and I'm proud to say today from our last call that I am now successfully down 27 pounds. So, yes, I am well on my way to hit my goal.
I wish.
Thank you,
Dennis.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Our next question comes from Walter Schenker of MAZ Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chris. Just to understand, and I don't know if there are seasonal patterns with people in Florida going north or something like that, this was a good operating quarter. This is typically, since you're looking to do 30 plus million in revenue this year and adding a couple of doctors, ensuing quarters without making a forecast would generally be similar or slowly getting better as you add doctors from a revenue standpoint and operating metrics compared to this quarter?
Walter, thank you, and I appreciate the great question. So, yes, some people have asked us if we're prepared today to update our guidance. And so what I want to tell you is that what we do know is you can see revenues were up 850 over last quarter, And now moving into Q2, the two additional physicians that we have brought on, you'd want to say, well, in their current space where they are, if they were at 100% of what they do, what would they be adding to us? And on a on an annual basis, I would have to then tell you that, you know, my expectations between the two gentlemen would be adding, $5 million on an annual basis, at a minimum is what I would hope that they would do when they're fully in place and do their services and then their additional ancillaries. Now, they're only going to come on in 1 month, left in Q2. So maybe that helps answer your question is that, maybe our Q2 call, we'll have a better footprint to see how quickly they're ramping up with our payers and their services. But clearly Q4 on both of these physicians will be a lot more than Q3, and Q3 will be a tremendous amount more than 1 month of only Q1. Now, that's just two doctors. That doesn't take into consideration just the surgery center coming online for additional contracts and getting these doctors now certified into the surgery center. One of these particular doctors does an average of 39 outpatient cases per month, and he'll be prepared now to move every one of those cases into the surgery center. Now, you would want to say that's great, but as I've explained on other calls, we probably only have insurance capabilities to do 20, and next month might be 22, and the following, it'll ramp up also, because if that center was fully engaged on 100% max capacity, it would be doing that day one, and we don't buy things that are that great. People don't sell things that are on the top. They sell things when they're down, and then our motto is to come in and fix it, right the ship, and then perform it.
Okay, but let me ask the question then, which answered part of it. Looking at the operating metrics in this quarter, you would expect to continue to operate with improving but not declining operating metrics for operating profits and costs relative to a revenue stream of $7 million?
Yes.
Okay, that was a hard way to get to my side, badly phrasing the question. Okay, that's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one.
Great opportunity here. So we're
at this time, we have no further questions. I'd like to conclude our session. And would like to thank you again for participating and turn the conference back over to Mr. Romandetti. Oh, excuse me, I do have another question. Our next question will come from Anthony Musto of Maximal Group. Please go ahead.
Hey, Chris. Anthony Musto. Hope you're doing well.
Great. Yes, sir.
Listen, I just wanted to ask you one question. With respect to bringing on a physician, what does the timeline look like for that?
Well, so, if it's an individual, the uniqueness of the two that we brought on were two different circumstances. One was a physician that's been practicing for the last 5 years, owns his own practice, owns his own staff, and his entire operation. And he actually went independent when we opened up ours, and he was part of an existing group of guys that were in our group. And so he tried it himself, and he thought it was amazing, and he did tremendous in revenues. But what then started taking him away was that he found himself spending 30% of the time working the back of the house. So when he finally realized that his peer groups here at our place that he used to work with were probably making a lot, a different take-home factor, and they were working 30% less, and productivity would go up. He just says, that's it. I give up. I want to be part of it. What do I do? So this particular one, we're taking over his entire practice. Now, once again, this really fits into us just saying we're allowing a doctor to be a doctor, okay? So to answer your question, what was the timeline? I would want to say those discussions started in January, maybe late January, February. And by the time we vetted everything to make sure his backgrounds were clean and no malpractice and everything and looked at everything, we went in and now are taking that entire practice over. Entire practice, a whole one-man shop. Great guy, phenomenal outcomes, well-respected in the community, full book of 500 surgeries a year, and has sent all his ancillary around town, which now he will send it all to us and do all his surgeries in our center. Took us mid-January, February. Could have brought him on again 2 months ago, but I needed the completion of March 31 to have the cash flow to bring him in. So I would say on his, it's about 120 days, and that was an entire practice. The other physician that's coming on board, it takes about 2 months to get somebody credentialed, and this happens to be somebody that's leaving the hospital system. So once again, I told you earlier, you know, when you're there for 4 years, and then they promise you the world, and then all of a sudden the world isn't quite as it's promised, that was just a matter of more of time. But on average, from an introduction to bringing on somebody is about a four-month process.
That's not bad at all. Okay, thanks very much, and congratulations.
Thank you, Anthony.
Our next question comes from Lewis Rabman of Daphna Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Chris, great quarter. Nice to see that the diet is going great as well. So maybe
yes, sir.
They go in parallel. I have a couple questions. One is, any seasonability to the business?
Well, without a doubt, I would typically refer to Chris on this, Chris Jones, our VP of Medical Operation, but I don't think she can come in on it. So I'll do my best job in answering that. What we've seen here is during the summertime, a little bit of a lull because the kids go, they're out on vacation, so planned surgeries go down, but acute problems remain the same. And then we see a little bit more sometimes in Q4, which we beat Q4 by 850, but Q4, a lot of people at the end of the year want to turn around and get their surgeries done when their deductibles have been met. But when you really look at my quarters as they're ramping up, I don't particularly put a lot of effort, not nearly as I can mention other companies out there that I see their fourth quarter is, you know, twice the size as Q1. So I think it's a minimum amount. But, you know, we'll have a lot better job forecasting Q2, 3, and 4 because we're just normalizing now what we really took over May of last year. We're just finally, you know, we're only 17 days into our second year now of doing the TPC. And so what happens to the street is you couldn't tell whether it organically was a Q over Q exact mix or did we do this in a surgery center, now we didn't do this. So I would want to say it's not nearly as highly affected as if I went to Naples, Florida, which I won't, because that population is a ghost town 6 months out of the year. So we do look at that into a community where we're going to where we want to keep that as minimal as possible so that we're not running big staff and having 30% swings in revenue.
Okay. And then as you add these doctors, your SG&A is going to stay the same. You won't need to add any back office or incremental cost to them?
Well, I think that's a great question. If you look at Q1 over last year, our corporate overhead, again, when I say to be corporate and public, was about $619,000 or so for segmented in Q1. And as I've stated, that as we go to bring another complete center, and here's what's going to happen, and it's short-term or long-term, and maybe you all need to know this from an investment standpoint. But if we really were to say we were prepared today to open up two complete centers like this for next year or starting in this year, this is hypothetical, you can't say we're opening one and then say, now let's try to assemble the management team. It won't work. It'd be like McDonald's saying, open up 30 franchises and we'll design the franchise package after we sign them. So I will have to bring in some overhead. I call it the transition team, the bolstering of the billing and collection with some more management regional people so that they're ready. Now, do remember, we get the benefit of scales of economy of this, that we're not going to put billing and collection people in all communities we go to. It'll always be done most likely at corporate, and just the coders go to these locations to load bills. But from compliance and everything, we'll have to bolster that up. Now, if my normalized, I've mentioned in the past, my goal is to get my corporate overhead below into single digits. So if we did $30 million and corporate overhead should be $3 million and we open up an entire new facility in another community, do I think our overhead would be 6? Absolutely not. I think we'd be closer to to under a 25% increase or closer to a 20% increase at corporate to open up each facility. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. And then on your receivables, you spoke right in the beginning. Just wondering your collections on them. How does that work? And then what reserve? I know you mentioned that in the beginning, but I missed the very very beginning of the call, so I apologize. But on your receivables, what is the reserve for some of them, and how much are you collecting, and how quick are you collecting them?
Right, so that's another great question. So in our system, that's over 4 years at First Choice Medical Group, which we then got out of our old company's billing and collection and moved to Athena almost 2.5 years ago now. We have taken ours down to about a 62-day average on AR. We at the back center, when we took it over, they were in a another person's system, and it had a, from an independent evaluation, we did it at a 206-day average. And since we put Athena in July, we're happy to say that's getting closer and closer. Now, spine's more complex, a lot more. We're noticing that might go as high as 90 days and then sometimes maybe slip to the 120 because of the complexity of spine. And why is that? You don't need an authorization to do a Medicare case, but they have all the right to deny it, and then you got to fight it peer-to-peer all the time. So spine will be a little bit more complex than the normal carpal tunnel or hips and knees that we do every day, or Today is Tuesday. We'll do 20-some-odd surgeries here in town. So the FC&G ones will have a 62-day average, and the TBC ones might have a 100-day average. But what I will tell you is that in the world of booking our AR is that every month it gets adjusted to our trailing 12-month average closed claim collection. Does that make sense? If we do a code and it pays $68 and I build out $300 for it, then all the codes in our system get written down to $68. So we write our AR down to our trailing average revenue received for closed claims. So we have never put anything out to the public to say we're putting out what we bill. We might bill four times the amount our AR is worth, but we don't book that number at all. It's always based on our trailing 12 audited month, and it hasn't changed within 0.2%. Matter of fact, it started to go up, and we're going to see if Q2 follows that pattern, and then my AR might have more value than we think, but Q1 will remain at the same rate for right now. The second thing that we pride ourselves in is that we don't take legacy AR and book it like we know other medical companies might. What does that mean? Anything over 120 days, we take to a direct reserve. So if our company hasn't worked that claim, and that doesn't mean they just all fall off. That means if you work it, it's current. But if you can't work it anymore and there's no more life in that claim, we take it to a write-off. So you won't come in and say, let me look at your AR, and nor does the auditors, where they'll come in and say, this claim's a year old. Why do you think this claim still has value to it? So on the commercial payers and the self-pays, that's our policy. The only product that goes longer than that is what I called my letter of protection work, which is scheduled that has a 16.2-month life cycle, which we monitor by the day to make sure that cycle stays. I have always said it's 18 months. It's getting tighter and tighter. But that's a very small piece, under 5% of our business that we do. And as we grow, that won't. So it'll diminish down to being 3% of our business probably the end of this year, because it's a great product, but it's not one we're trying to run and ramp up. So our AR, I hope that answers your question on the value of it. It's for us. Your next part of your part two of your question was, how did that relate to provisions for bad debt? If you weren't on the prior call from quarter end last year, we got hit pretty hard that the two companies we took over, there wasn't a provision for bad debt, and under GAAP, they're requiring us to hold a 30% reserve of our AR. So at FCMG, if our AR was at $2.7 million, we had $900,000. They were happy with it. But Crane Creek Surgery Center needed a $250,000 reserve, and then TBC needed $1.9 million. Well, we had $800,000 in there, and they just wouldn't let me push it. They made me take it so that any accounts receivable on the books has a provision of 30%. And that's where we're at now. So if my AR goes up by a true $1 million in Q2, they're going to make me bring $333,000 into reserve. And I'm telling you, I'll collect the million, but that's just how Gap wants it done. So once that goes flat and you're doing business and you're steady, say at TBC, now it doesn't mean we can't grow in the rest of the country, but eventually if we hit my goal, I told you of $50 million and say your AR is 10 and you have $3 million in reserve, then you'll recognize higher returns because you won't have to take any more. But if AR goes up and it's because you're doing more business, we bring in these two new doctors and our AR goes up on a yearly basis of $6 million or $5 million, their AR will go up 2 months worth of their business, which is $400,000 or $500,000. I'll have to take additional reserves. So that again is under GAAP. It's a very conservative method. The conversations we're having with the CFO that's coming in, if we come to terms, is well versed. Has ran a very large operation with, I would say, maybe up to 44 individual, you would say, medical practice, consolidating into one major unit that was doing closer to $200 million in business than $100 million. And we hope to bring that expertise in so that we can make sure that we're recognizing revenues. But as of today, I'm telling you, we are on the far side of more conservative than I ever thought we'd have to be.
Okay. You could see them change it as well.
I think we'll see changes that will affect our revenues to go up, because if you have to take a reserve every time you book $100, you got to put $33 in the bucket of reserve. You're not recognizing $100 in revenue, are you?
No.
So we're getting hit. The more I grow the business, the more I got to put in reserves till AR stabilizes and levels off.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back to Mr. Romandetti for any closing remarks.
Well, in closing, I'd like to thank everybody in participating in today's call. It's much appreciated. Like always, you can email us at the company's website. We did launch the new website. I hope you take an advantage if you haven't recently and go to it. Comments are always welcome to see the transparency on how we're trying to get everybody to have additional information and then be able to email. Feel free to email me any of your questions, and I'll do the best I can if you missed any of them on today's call. And I just look forward to seeing you all again on the road and when I'm out and about, and look forward to a Q2 call or if anything else happens that warrants to have a call sooner than that. So once again, thank you everybody for taking the time today out of your busy schedule to be part of our company and part of the call. And I want to thank you all, if you are a shareholder, for your continued support. And if you're not, we look forward one day to have you as one. Thank you and have a great day.